It is a sunny Saturday, and we have a brand new program we're proud to present each and every Saturday at noon, Minnesota Law. As you heard, presented by Moss and Barnett, a longtime law firm here in the Twin Cities based in downtown Minneapolis. And joining us in studio, he will be a regular on the program, my co-host Tom Schroyer. He is the president and CEO of Moss and Barnett. Tom, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks so much for joining us in studio. The sun's out. It's a great day.
It is, Steve. We're really looking forward to this program. Thanks.
And joining us in studio as well, John Rossman, chair of Moss and Barnett's Creditors, Remedies, and Bankruptcy Practice Group. John, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Steve, I'm honored to be here this morning. Thank you.
And the sun's out. We didn't get a lot of snow. That's great news. I was worried about that overnight, that we were going to see some snow on the ground this morning, but that didn't come, and it looks like it's going to warm up. Now, we're not sure what the weather is like in Boston today, but Susan Rode will be a regular contributor on the program. And, of course, Susan is co-chair of Moss and Barnett's Family Law Practice Group. Susan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. And the weather's terrible here.
So you have our weather that we had yesterday in Boston.
It's very cold and rainy.
Well, Susan, you'll be a regular contributor on the program, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Susan, first of all, tell us why you're in Boston and you're at Harvard today.
I am. I'm actually talking to you from Harvard Square, and I'm here taking an advanced arbitration class. Just stepped out of my final exam, as a matter of fact, to talk today. So,
now, how much pressure was there in that final exam?
There's a lot of pressure. There's about 40 lawyers here, and not one of them has said a word in over an hour and a half. So that tells you how much pressure there is.
Wow. Now, in part of the introductions on the program today and going forward, we'll have the very latest news. Really stories right out of the headlines in the newspapers, television, and radio. We'll talk about those stories. We'll learn more about Moss and Barnett going forward and areas of expertise. But Susan, talk a little bit about your specific areas of expertise.
Well, my area is family law, and that gets into all kinds of subjects, obviously, from child custody issues to premarital agreements to divorces to property valuations to anything dealing with a family.
And Susan, you have to be proud. You've won some awards, super lawyer, named among the best lawyers in America. You've got to be proud of those accomplishments.
I am. Our whole department has been recognized repeatedly, and very proud of all of us for what we've accomplished.
And I know in coming programs, your areas of expertise will be featured, and we'll be taking phone calls in those areas of expertise, and we're sure those will generate a lot of comments and a lot of questions, because it is something that impacts everyone.
It is. That is the one area of law that most of us touch on at some time in our life.
Susan Rode joining us on the line from Boston. She's at Harvard. She just finished a test. You sound a bit relieved. That's good.
Actually, I'm about halfway through.
Oh, no. So it's just a break, so there's more to go.
Yes.
And then a return trip to the Twin Cities soon?
Yes.
Now, Susan, we're going to you know a lot about your colleagues joining us in studio, but the listeners don't. And let's start with John. John, tell us a little bit about your areas of expertise at Moss and Barnett and your role.
Sure. As you mentioned at the top, I represent creditors and debt collectors, primarily in two areas. Number one, if a business is owed money by another business, I'm the lawyer. Our group is the group of attorneys that will facilitate collection of that money. And then the other area which we practice in is representing collection agencies with respect to compliance and also with respect to if the collection agencies get sued.
And coming up later on in the program, we're going to talk about a story right out of the headlines. The Federal Reserve and other regulators initiated steps on Friday to end unfair and deceptive credit card industry practices. We're going to get your thoughts on that, because that's something that you have some strong opinions on and is right into your area of expertise, and that's something that impacts everyone. I don't know anyone that doesn't have a credit card.
I think a lot of people have strong opinions on it, so thank you.
Yeah, and Tom, of course, the president and CEO of Moss and Barnett. And Tom, tell us a little bit about your background. You've been practicing law for a long time, and now the president and CEO. You lead this fine firm.
Well, it is a privilege to be associated with such a great organization, and I know that my colleagues John and Susan have been quite modest in their self-expressions here today, and so that's just an example of really the high quality of folks that we have in our firm. And we are also pleased to be joining here with you, Steve, and the other folks at WCCO Radio on this show. I've been practicing in this area for 30 years, and my focus is really almost entirely on civil litigation, although I also represent business owners on a variety of topics. And in that regard, have been involved in any wide variety of different kinds of litigation. I'm certified as a civil trial specialist by the State Bar Association, and I do a lot of work as well, working with certified public accountants in connection with various matters affecting their legal rights. So that's really it in a nutshell.
And it is a large, well-established firm, Tom. The history of the firm goes back, and we'll talk more about the firm, but this goes back to the 1800s and its roots here in Minnesota. And there's no question that Moss and Barnett is part of the legal fabric here in the Upper Midwest.
Exactly, Steve. Jesse Van Valkenburg founded this firm's predecessor firm in 1896 when he hung his shingle out in downtown Minneapolis, having graduated from Harvard Law School, which was quite a remarkable achievement back in those days. And so the firm has grown and evolved with the times ever since, and became named Moss and Barnett in 1983 when the firms of Moss, Flaherty, Clarkson, and Fletcher joined with Barnett, Rattell, Hennessy, Herzog, and Stazel. And then after that, we were joined by Weiss and Cox. And so we've been a staple of the Minnesota legal bar for over a century.
And business has changed since day one at Moss and Barnett. We were talking before the program. So many things have changed in the area of family law and business law. The internet, for example, on the business side, and there are tremendous ramifications, whether it's a small, medium size, or large business. And those are the types of things we'll discuss on the program. Susan, before we let you go and get back to the second round of testing at Harvard today, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background and why you wanted to get into the law and why you wanted to become an attorney.
Well, somewhat embarrassed to tell you that I actually went to law school on a dare. I was a junior high school teacher at the time, and my brother, younger brother, started law school and dared me to go. And sibling rivalry is what got me to the practice of law.
And where did you attend school? What led you to Moss and Barnett? How did you end up at Moss and Barnett?
Well, I attended Hamlin School of Law right there in St. Paul. And I got my job at Moss and Barnett right after a judicial clerkship at the Court of Appeals, and was going through the hiring process, and my judges said this would be a nice place to work and made sure I got my job there, which was wonderful.
Now, John, same thing to you. Why did you decide to become an attorney and get involved in the law?
Sure. You know, my daughters just asked me this question the other day.
Oh, great.
I have a 9-year-old and a almost 6-year-old. And initially I wanted to be a doctor, but when I realized it involved looking at blood and realized that wasn't something I could handle, I really enjoyed watching the show Perry Mason when I was a kid. So that was really a lot of my motivation to go to law school. Also, I went to Marquette University and I have a degree in journalism. And then after that, it just seemed like the natural progression to go into the practice of law. And been with the firm, going on my 6th year now, I've been with Moss and Barnett, and it's an incredible firm and an incredible place with a lot of opportunity.
And Tom, University of Minnesota guy.
Straight on through, 7 straight years, Steve. Loved every second of it, except the finals. And, joined this firm back in 1980 after a few years with a firm, first of all, in Des Moines, Iowa, where I was admitted to the bar in 1977. And I decided to become a lawyer for the same reason John did. There was something in the Raymond Burr character on Perry Mason that just I really resonated with. So there you have it.
Now, Susan, did you have a legal hero growing up?
Not really. I was always wanted to be a teacher, and that was really where my interest lied until I quit teaching and went into law school. So did not have a legal hero. I do recall the program LA Law, though, and I was impressed with Moss and Barnett because the conference room was the same as it was on LA Law at the time.
Oh, cool.
That, so.
I've got to check that out someday. I want to see that. I have to visit. I think sometime this week, if it's not too busy, I'd like to stop and check that out. I remember that conference room well. Well, Susan, I know you're very busy at Harvard today. We are going to let you go, but we look forward to hearing you on future programs.
And I look forward to being there. Thank you.
Susan Rowe joining us from Boston. Once again, Susan, co-chair of Moss & Barnett's Family Law Practice Group. We have more with Tom and John coming up. We're going to learn more about the fascinating history of Moss & Barnett. And going forward, we're going to talk about a couple of cases. Tom's going to address two decisions by the Minnesota Court of Appeals. And this is a great question and could impact anyone. When is the owner of real estate responsible for injury to trespassers? That's coming up on the program. It is Minnesota Law, our first ever show. We hope you're enjoying yourself. We are Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett here on 830 WCCO. Welcome back. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett. I'm Steve Thompson. Joining me in studio, Tom Schroyer and John Rossman. We let Susan Rowe go. She had to get back to a test at 12:30 our time today. She sounded pretty calm, and I'm sure that's nerve-wracking, those types of exams. That can be a challenge. I'm sure both of you remember the bar exam very well, John, and how stressful that was. I have a friend that's an attorney, and he tells me all the time, oh, it was stressful.
No, absolutely. You know, my wife and I had just started dating at the time, actually, so she reminds me frequently. We've been married 11 years now, but she reminds me frequently of the stress that I went through going through that bar exam, and you never know until you get those results whether you passed or you failed, so.
And it is tough. It is very tough. You literally are put to the test, right, Tom?
No question about it. And the range of topics that we're examined about is really quite far-reaching, everything from income tax to family law to real property contracts and criminal law. So it's really quite a feat to get through it. And, of course, many folks pass the bar more than once with different states nowadays.
And there are areas of expertise. Each and every firm has their areas of expertise and areas of focus. Let's talk about that with Moss & Barnett, Tom. What are the areas of focus and expertise for your firm?
Well, we are really a business law firm, and by that we mean that we work very much with the owners of businesses in Minnesota and throughout the country, both for their business and for them individually, and so that we are really able to serve not only people from an individual standpoint doing their trusts and estates and other succession planning, but also helping with their business on a wide variety of matters from real estate to mergers and acquisitions, securities, financing. We represent a number of banks. And in addition to that, of course, we have our family law group, which is very, very much focused on working with people who are involved around these very complex and involved issues involving family-owned businesses in many cases or other financial assets. And on top of that, we are very, very actively involved nationwide with John Rossman's group here on the enforcement of debt and creditors' remedies. And we have a long tradition of working in the telecommunications and regulated energy areas. We are doing a significant amount of work now throughout the country on energy-related matters, and have long-standing pedigree in working with local telephone companies and wireless carriers. And we do an extensive amount all over the upper Midwest now for Verizon Wireless as well in that regard. So our practice runs the gamut, really, for those kinds of interests and those kinds of areas. I would say quickly that we do not focus on some things, and I think that's important for our audience to know, too. We do not do personal injury. And we do not do criminal law or consumer bankruptcy.
And, John, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but technology is rapidly changing, and I'm sure keeping up on technology is crucial, especially in your area of expertise, that technology is crucial.
No, it's absolutely true. You know, there was a ruling that came down from the Federal Trade Commission a couple weeks ago involving whether or not a company can use an automated dialer to call your cell phone. You know, it's campaign season right now, and a lot of folks are getting calls related to campaign donations and trying to get the vote out. Certainly with my area that I practice in, it relates to collections. But the FTC held, in connection with the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, that unless you previously give out your phone number to a company or to an individual, they cannot call you on your cell phone without your prior consent.
Wow.
Let me clarify, with the use of an automated dialer. And the automated dialer is how a lot of these campaign calls are made today, and a lot of calls are made through collection campaigns. It's through an automated dialer, a machine that will dial, you know, number after number until it reaches an answer.
And Tom, to work with individuals and businesses large and small, it takes not only a staff of attorneys to accomplish that, but a large support staff as well. How many folks work at Moss & Barnett?
We have about 170 folks working at Moss & Barnett just across the street here at the Wells Fargo Center in downtown Minneapolis. And in addition to our attorneys who are number now more than 70 attorneys, we also feature a large contingent of paralegals and, of course, legal assistants and other administrative personnel who are involved in everything from making sure our intellectual telephony and intellectual property works well, as well as making sure that we are able to reach out and deliver the kinds of services that our clients are entitled to receive.
And how does this firm compare to other firms? Is it a large firm, medium-sized, small?
Well, Steve, we like to say that we are right-sized for Minnesota business. And the reason we say that is that we have really focused our growth pattern on the needs of our clients. And as a result, we have grown very steadily and consistently over the years with them to focus on their needs. And in that regard, we would say that we are really a firm that, if you look at it from the prism of the state of Minnesota, we're one of the 15 largest firms in the state, one of the top 10 largest in terms of focusing on business law. And that in terms of nationally, well, nowadays the firms range in size from $2 billion operations, of course, on down to solo practitioners. So we do array in the middle of the pack, as it were, when you look at it from the big 50,000-foot level.
And is the size of a firm important in working with other firms around the country? Because business has become a global marketplace. Even the smallest businesses may ship products overseas, may deal with customers in China or Europe or Africa, wherever. There probably has to be networking that wasn't possible or even reasonable 20 years ago.
Quite right, Steve. And for that reason, we belong to an international legal network. One of our attorneys, in fact, is at the semiannual conference of that group right now down in Arizona. And through that network, we have access to legal expertise and offices really all throughout the United States into Canada, Mexico, the Caribbean Basin, Europe, and over into Asia as well.
And in your area of expertise, John, are there challenges because someone may be licensed to practice law in Minnesota or Wisconsin, for example, but there may be an issue in Florida or New York? How are things like that handled?
Sure. We have clients that have needs in all 50 states. And how we handle it is we have lawyers who are admitted to practice in a handful of states. I'm admitted, I think, to practice in, let's see, North Dakota, Minnesota, Eastern and Western District of Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois.
Is that a different bar exam in each?
No,
oh,
it's not.
Okay.
No,
Whoa,
that's based on the, there again, that's based on the needs of the clients. So it's, sure. we're admitted to practice in a handful of states, and then we associate with other attorneys in other states. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll prepare whatever. The client wants to be more comfortable working with us, and they want to have someone that they can call and know what's going on. And then we will work with other attorneys in other states to the extent necessary. If someone needs to appear at a hearing in Florida or in Texas, we have relationships with folks, with great attorneys in other states that we'll work with to get the job done right.
It is. John Rossman and Tom Schroyer joining us in studio. Our first ever Minnesota Law presented by Moss & Barnett each and every Saturday at noon. We have the news and weather coming up next and then much more, including your phone calls. And we're going to talk about some of the stories in the news here on 830 WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us. The sun is out and joining us in studio on what's turned out to be a very nice Saturday. Tom Schroyer and John Rossman from Moss & Barnett. And one of the big features of the show will be your phone calls and talking about some of the items in the news that have legal implications. And there are a lot of those every day. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of stuff, especially in the area of business law. And I want to follow up a little bit, Tom, on that. And you talked about some of the large firms and large businesses you deal with, but also dealing with individuals, and especially individuals in the area of family law. And it's really part of the American dream for everyone to start their own business, and you will assist people in going down that road and starting their own business the correct way.
Well, absolutely, Stephen. In fact, we have many, many success stories in our firm's history of working with folks just as they're starting a brand new business. It may just be an idea, a twinkle in their eye, so to speak, and at the end of the day, they've been very successful, and we've been very pleased to have been a part of some of that. In fact, we're just in the process right this year of having one of our clients that started off with nothing more than articles of incorporation end up being sold after about 20 years of business operation to a very large company for a really significant amount of money. And we've been quite excited to see all of that happen and for the success of our clients in that.
And it is important when people are pursuing the American dream and owning their own business that they do it correctly. And there are a number of reasons for that. And in shows coming up, we'll give people a roadmap in that area on things they need to consider and things they need to keep in mind.
Well, for example, it's just not possible even for lawyers to keep track of all of the different ins and outs of employment law, wage and hour law, issues dealing with their accounts receivable and how to collect them, real estate. And so it's important for people starting out in business or with an existing business to make sure that they're with a firm that has the expertise, the breadth, and the depth to make sure that they're getting the job done as it needs to be.
And, John, there is no question for a business any size, getting the money in, collecting the money is an important part of it, and having a game plan to do that effectively is a key.
Sure. You know, really, with respect to accounts receivable, especially now with the economy being a little bit softer, collections and the collection of accounts receivable starts before you even start the customer relationship. It starts out with simple things like a credit application, making sure that the person or the company that you're dealing with has the ability to pay you. And then it goes all the way through the gamut through what you can do when an account starts to get delinquent to when it might possibly go to our office.
And standard operating procedures, I think even a mom and pop, a small business, maybe or opening a store, maybe pursuing a franchise opportunity, those are all things that Moss & Barnett specializes in and can help people with.
Well, you mentioned franchising opportunities, Steve, and we do have a significant number of clients who are both franchisors and who have purchased franchises, and they are operating all over the United States, and that can be very complex from a legal standpoint to do.
And, guys, we are going to wade into our first call in the history of the program, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett here on 830 WCCO. In the area of individuals and individual law, Connie in St. Paul, you have the first question. Congrats, Connie, and it's in the area of wills and trusts. Connie, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes. Does your firm have anything to do with representing anyone for wills and trusts or defending wills and trusts?
Oh, absolutely, Connie. We have actually a very significant department, one of the more well-established and substantial departments in this area of practice. And we routinely work with individuals on trusts and estates and wills, tax planning around estates, and charitable giving.
And, Tom, here is the question that I'm sure you get all the time, and it'll be asked frequently on the program, and it is a follow-up to wills and trusts. I don't have much. It's just me. Do I need a will? I would assume everyone should have a will. Help us understand that. Who needs a will? Who doesn't?
You are exactly right. It's a very good idea for everyone to have a will, and if for no other reason, to make sure that their children or other interested parties are given some direction about how to deal with the what these every individual inevitably leaves behind. But just as importantly, to make sure that they do what they can to avoid probate and to minimize the tax burden to their heirs and successors.
By the way, our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226 is our phone number on the program. Once again, joining us in studio, John Rossman and Tom Schroyer from Moss & Barnett. Let's go back to the phones. James, caller number two on the program. James in Brooklyn Park, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I just want to know if they handle anything on pension plans. I believe my company owes me at least $200 a month. More than they're paying me, And is there anybody out there that would handle something like that other than the Attorney General or something like that? And they owe me some back pay on it, too.
All right, James, let's get into pensions and retirements and those types of issues. Is that something that Moss and Barnett would help with or help someone deal with?
I would say that we do a significant amount of work for pension planning for business owners. I would say that James' question is one probably where he could find a better legal resource in the community, and we're going to be making it clear to folks when they call in if there are better places for them to address their needs at, and that there are firms, for example, that do focus exclusively or virtually exclusively in the area of individual remedies for Social Security, disability, and pension benefit recoveries.
And there are also some free legal resources out there for folks. One that I'm involved with is through the Hennepin County Bar Association. That's the Legal Access Point, which is here at the Hennepin County Government Center. From 9 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon, most every day there's a lawyer available. And anyone can come in. If they have a legal question, they can get up to a 15-minute legal consultation free of charge right there, second floor of the Hennepin County Government Center.
Excellent. And by the way, once again, if people want to learn more about Moss and Barnett, they can go online. There's an excellent website. Once again, terrific website. Once again, moss-barnett.com, moss-barnett.com. Excellent website. Terrific job. Who put that together? Who works on that?
That's our marketing coordinator here today with us, Deb Weinstock. So congratulations to her.
Outstanding. If I was giving out awards, award-winning website, moss-barnett.com, a terrific resource. And that's one of the things we'll learn more about the firm and what the areas of expertise are on the program and answer people's questions if it is possible or send people in another direction if need be. But back to the area of business, whether it's a small business, medium-sized, large business, Fortune 500, benefits packages, pension plans, retirements, all part of what the company does, what the firm does in helping individuals and businesses deal with those types of things because it can be complicated.
Absolutely. And in fact, our attorneys are required by the state bar licenses to attend continuing education regularly every year and earn a minimum number of credits. And our attorneys do that, of course, but also focusing on their areas of expertise to make sure that they are up to date.
Excellent. All right, Stacy in Maplewood. Stacy, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am interested in starting a consulting business, and a girlfriend of mine was talking to me, and she said to go with a limited liability as opposed to being incorporated, and I'm just wondering if you have any idea about that, what the difference is.
Wow. Well, Stacy, I've got a million questions to follow up on that, but thanks for the call, and we'll wade through it. We have Tom and John here who look excited to address this, but there are a number of options when someone starts a business. Let's go through some of those and some of those options. Now, Stacy, you would certainly need to visit with an attorney to help wade through that, but in general, there are a number of options on how someone can incorporate a business.
Well, there sure are. In fact, they range from incorporating to forming a partnership or a limited liability company or a limited liability partnership. Or just continuing as a sole proprietorship. And I would say to Stacy that all of those issues depend on her circumstances, her goals for the future, how she plans to grow and operate her business, whether she intends to bring in other owners eventually or not. And so you are quite right, Steve. Those kinds of issues are ones that are really addressed by each individual circumstance, and we will be having folks who specialize or have great expertise in that area, that very question, here on the show. So we'd ask Stacy to stay tuned.
And I can't overemphasize the importance of making sure that that gets done right at the outset of the inception of the business. I see a lot of scenarios where someone gets real excited about a business plan, they go right into it, and then maybe a year or two down the road think about, well, should we have incorporated, should we have created an LLC? And a lot of times without setting the proper foundation early on could lead to personal liability for the folks that started the company. So that is a very important first step that you must consider when starting a business.
And guys, it is fair to say there are horror stories. People get this idea that we're going to put a lot of our personal assets into starting a business. We're going to put our life savings into this. And if things go wrong, if something happens, whatever that something is, people can lose everything if the business isn't set up correctly. It's crucial.
Correct, and that's why as well we have folks who do work out plans for businesses when they need help in the arena of bankruptcy or other kinds of debtor protection when they're a business owner.
And what about the complicated issue of family businesses that may be passed on to a new generation? That is something that impacts many, many people. Small towns, here in the big city, there are businesses owned by, say, mom and dad, and they want to pass those along to the kids. What about that, Tom, John? I'm sure that's something Moss and Burnett would assist people with.
That's a huge part of our practice. As a matter of fact, on a routine basis, our attorneys are working with families to make sure that the wishes of the founding generation are honored with respect to transitioning the business to other family members, which can always, or often at least, be a very, very tricky matter and can lead to some interesting debates within a family.
Very complicated, I'm sure. Very complicated. Well, already great calls here on the program. We appreciate those. Once again, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. We appreciate you joining us. Coming up, some items in the news. If we have time for more calls, we'll squeeze those in as well at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226 here on 830-WCCO. The show has gone very quickly. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, joining us in studio, Tom Schroyer. Tom will be joining us on a very regular basis. John Rossman also joining us in studio, will be a regular on the program. So it's excellent to meet you both in studio today. And we'll be learning more about Tom and John. Susan Rowe joined us from Boston a little bit earlier, and Susan will be joining us on future programs as well. Your calls are always welcome on the program, and we have time to squeeze in a couple more calls, and we want to get to those news stories we talked about a little bit earlier in the show. Quickly, we're going to bring in Carl in St. Paul. Carl, you're on the air. Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. I saw a deal on the television, a news special report on prevailing wage. And my understanding is the state of Minnesota determines how much people in construction make.
Oh, okay. The Care 11 story about prevailing wage and how contracts are handed out.
Well, how much do you have to pay? And I'm wondering, you know, do the teachers have the same thing? Are we saying in the state of Minnesota that, you know, a laborer pushing a broom is worth more than the people teaching our kids?
All right, Carl, that's something that we may need to take a look at and investigate further. But there was a story on Care 11 News recently talking about how state contracts are handed out and how construction workers are paid. That sounds like a very complex issue.
Right. It really comes back to labor law questions and construction industry questions, because a number of states, including Minnesota, do mandate that folks working on those kinds of projects be paid at the prevailing wage standard. And teachers, of course, are regulated differently by each school district with their own separate contractual negotiations.
And that is a story ripped right out of the headlines, right out of the news. Fascinating. And those are the types of things we're going to be talking about on our program going forward. We have to get to those stories we talked about a little bit earlier. And, Tom, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of decisions from the Minnesota Court of Appeals. And this is something that could impact anyone that owns real estate. When the owner of real estate is responsible for injury to trespassers, you would think that someone trespassing on property and they get hurt, that's their problem.
Well,
not necessarily the case.
You know, you almost have to go to law school to get your mind around this stuff, for sure. But I'm glad
you did.
The answer is that a trespasser does have legal rights against the owner of property when they are injured on the property being trespassed, where there is a risk of physical harm to the trespasser that the owner knew or should have known would create an unreasonable risk of causing injury. So We have a couple of cases around this point today to talk about. All of or both of them were decided here within the last month. In the first, the Minnesota Court of Appeals was asked to decide whether or not a snowmobiler who was driving with a blood alcohol content of 0.15 percent at a speed almost double the posted limit for snowmobiles could sue for a very serious injury incurred when he was trespassing on a private lot and was injured as he struck a for sale or a lot for sale sign that was posted near the snowmobile trail. The trial court threw the case out, Steve, on the grounds that a Minnesota state law immunizes the owners of property when people are trespassing or using the property, rather, for recreational purposes. But the Court of Appeals held that the immunity granted by that statute did not apply because the homeowner had not talked to or given written permission to the trespasser to use the property. So the irony here is that because this snowmobiler was using the land without permission, he was allowed to sue and maintain a lawsuit for his injury. And so it goes just the other way in our second case. And I can see, Steve, you're looking at me with disbelief here.
Oh, my.
The answer is that, again, a trespasser does have legal rights in Minnesota and virtually every other state for being able to sue when they are injured on somebody else's property. But in our second case, also decided here within the past month, a child was tragically injured when the child was in a friend's home visiting with the child's mother and was injured when the bookcase in the home fell over on the child. And so the Court of Appeals went through the analysis, and even though the woman and her child were on the home with permission and thus were not trespassing, the court said that trespass law would normally apply and the child would be entitled to recover for having the injury because of the falling bookcase, but, and the but is important, not when the child is with a parent, a natural parent or a guardian. In that case, the duty of the parent to safeguard the child overrides the homeowner's duty to protect trespassers from unreasonable risk of harm.
Wow.
So you can find out more, Steve, about these cases, as can our listeners, by looking at the Minnesota Courts website, which is at mincourts.gov.
Outstanding. Those are fascinating stories. One other story that impacts everyone, and that came Friday, and it's in our news today. The Federal Reserve and other regulators initiated steps Friday to end unfair and deceptive credit card industry practices assailing consumers who are already struggling to cope in a bad economy. The proposed rules would be the biggest clampdown on the industry in decades, aiming at protecting people from credit card companies that arbitrarily raise interest rates and don't give borrowers adequate time to pay their bills. John, some thoughts on that?
Sure. I look at regulations like this, and really these regulations are directed at maybe the 1% of the consumers who don't pay their credit card bills. And these particular practices about which the that were addressed here were practices that were a lot of times aimed at those really high-risk borrowers. There's a certain subset of people who don't have access to credit. There's a certain subset of people who simply can't borrow money from anyone, but there are some credit card companies that are willing to take that risk and willing to loan money to those people even though the risk is great. And what I see these rules doing, first of all, taking away the opportunity for some people to be able to get credit cards or be able to get credit, because with these rules, the credit card companies aren't going to want to take on higher risk profiles. But secondly, and more importantly, I think rules like this are going to cause the losses that are created by those high-risk accounts to be spread across all credit card users, including those who pay their cards on time.
So this is something we haven't heard the end of. The Federal Reserve and other regulators initiated these steps, but there could very well likely be a fight over it.
I wouldn't doubt it, and I wouldn't doubt that there are going to be more regulations proposed and enacted in response to this.
The hour's gone very quickly. We had some great calls. It was great to meet you both, and we'll learn more about Moss and Barnett and take more calls in future programs. We have a great show coming up next week, and we invite you to join us. here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on 830 WCCO. Thanks for listening.